still Dr. Doom. What of him?
Hey there, and welcome to Season 3 of Marvel by the Month. My name's Brian Stratton.
And mine is Rob Milne.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the world has changed a little bit since we last came to you with one of our current weekly episodes. It feels like it was a very long time ago that we were doing our season two finale at Books with Pictures.
With
human beings in the same room and everything.
Humans.
Now we can't even go in there, which is extraordinarily sad. How are you doing?
I've trained for this my whole life. I'm very good at entertaining myself, and I know you are too.
Yeah.
Not seeing the light of day for a bit. And or talking to other people. That's what I mean by trained for this my whole life. Allergies also have made it so I'm like, pollen's out there. I'm just going to stay in here and read comics.
Yeah.
So our stay inside and read comics shirt and design has now come back to be more ironic.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Or more appropriate, I guess. It's not even ironic at this point.
No, I don't think we had any idea how relevant that was going to wind up being.
Yeah. So how about yourself?
Doing okay. My kid obviously is home from school, and my wife is also working from home. So, all three of us are around each other all the time. We haven't even gotten close to any sort of shining moments yet, which I'm going to count as a win, 2 weeks into our enforced isolation. It's pretty weird. I'm not going to lie. I'm really happy that we have this to be doing. It gives a little sense of normalcy to the days. I'm still working. I've always worked from home. And I'm lucky that, I still have work to be doing. It's very strange. I feel very unstuck in time right now.
Yeah. I feel like it's like a painful staycation. Just because I'm working a lot and Barb works in HR. So, and I know Sarah does too. So,
yeah.
They're both busy with terrible things.
Yeah.
It's just heart wrenching and it's hard to be, I'm very thankful. I'm more than busy right now. I don't know how long that will last, but I will just say yes and do my work.
Yeah.
But it's very cool. I had an excuse to get a new mic that I really wanted. So I could be our first remote guest.
I was going to say, I mean, that's probably worth mentioning. If we sound a little different, it's because for the first time ever, we are not in the same room when we're doing this thing. I know this is not terribly uncommon with podcasting, but it's the first time we've had to try to do it. Again, just another thing to kind of get used to. Everyone is in a version of that boat right now. So, of all the things that, I could be complaining about, I don't have any, anything really to complain about at all. I feel very lucky, obviously very shell-shocked by everything that's going on, but things could be a lot worse and they're not. And I just feel, I feel lucky that I'm in a position to get through this pretty okay with my family. And hopefully be a little helpful to, friends and family who could really use, an assist right now. So,
That's the other piece that I'm just getting to being useful to other people.
Yeah.
I've eaten all the toilet paper I can get, that's where we're at right
now.
Just starting to be able to reach out and help people. And there's, everyone's affected. I don't know anyone, in my immediate circle I take that back. A colleague of Barb's has contracted the virus.
So,
So it is getting closer to home, and I imagine in the next few weeks it'll get closer for all of us.
Yeah. No, I think this episode comes out, you know, a week from when we're recording it. So, you know, I mean, I feel like we're kind of slowly going up the first big hill on the world's worst roller coaster.
Yeah.
But, you know, just hopefully, you know, we can hang on and just get through it. You know, one of the things that I was just commenting on to someone else is that as we've been doing this podcast, there's a lot of things I take comfort in from doing the podcast, in that, it, you know, it's a distraction. It gives a sense of, you know, regularity and normalcy to my day that I don't have a lot of right now. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, when we go back through and we talk about some of the historical context, we realize, like, you know, as a culture, we have survived some pretty gnarly things. Like, there was a lot of stuff in the 60s that, you know, that was absolutely terrifying, you know, maybe as terrifying, well, maybe not quite as terrifying as what we're going through right now. But, you know, like, my dad, when he was, you know, in his late teens or early 20s, was literally suited up in uniform and ready to deploy to Cuba during the missile crisis. Like, and it was almost at the very last minute that they called it off. But, I mean, you know, he was ready to go. And, you know, the world was like on the brink of nuclear annihilation. So, you know, a terrifying thing that we got through.
Yeah.
So
that we, yeah. And that I wish we would learn from. That's the other terrible part of this, or not terrible. It's interesting, I should say, is that we revisit these moments in history and then we revisit comics, thankfully, mm-hmm. For our normal escape. But, then we realize the context in which, you know, things that are happening today are reflected in that. And it's hard to know that within, you know, almost within our lifetimes, I guess a little before. I'm so used to thinking I, you know, heard the Beatles when they were, you know, a band. that we basically are seeing a lot of things repeat, and they do. It's just like the short span of human life makes it hard for people to understand. They should just read and take lessons from history or just be nice to each other. It's a very weird thing to see, but this is what we're dealing with now is a special global unprecedented thing. It is, with the information we all have and share, it's a plague that we can all see happening.
Yep. It's a weird, helpless feeling. You know, I am not by any stretch of the imagination, considered essential, to anything. I don't have, you know, medical training. I don't have, you know, I don't deliver food to people. I don't, you know, stock grocery shelves. So, you know, there's not a lot I can do. Like, literally everything that I am being told to do is do nothing, which is, it's very tricky. You know, but the one thing that we are able to do, is this dumb podcast, which hopefully, you know, is, I don't know.
A solace,
A
distraction at the very least.
Exactly. At the very least, you know, you can hop in our time machine, go back 55 years to, when we were worried about a whole bunch of different things. You know, I think, maybe that's what we can do right now. So that's what we're going to do. And hopefully this makes someone's day slightly easier. It's making my day slightly easier, if nothing else.
me,
so
me too.
I'm just going to take that.
We'll give you this.
Yeah. Let's just go ahead and go back in time, long before we were worried about any of the crap that's in the news right now. And kick off season 3 of this thing. What do you think?
I am all for this.
Excellent. So, again, everybody, welcome to season 3 of Marvel by the Month. We are kicking off season 3 with this episode, and we're going to play a little bit of catch up. And by that, I mean, so Douglas Wolk, who guested on our live episode, our season two finale, who also knows everything there is to know about Marvel Comics, he actually gave us a heads up after the live show that the cover dates on Marvel Comics at this point are starting to get a little bit out of sync with each other. So as it turns out, all the issues that are cover dated May 1965 did not actually come out in the same month, because that's how comics publishing worked in those days. It was not an exact science. So what we're going to be doing, we're shifting things up a little bit, and we're going to be organizing each week's episodes by the date that the issues hit the stands going forward. And the way that we are getting these dates was a great resource that Douglas turned us onto, Mike's Amazing World of Comics, which you can access at mikesamazingworld.com. That means that we're doubling up on a couple series this week that we got a little out of sync with. And hopefully that means everything is going to be synced up going forward. This also means that even though we already had an April 1965 episode, or one that was called April 1965, we now have a second one. So the first one was comics that were cover dated April 65. This is the ones that were actually released in April 1965, just to make things super confusing.
And if you want confusing, try reading these. This is the reason why we need to do it this way, too, is because there's, as you know, the cross-pollination of the Marvel Universe is so robust that there are references peppered throughout, not just, you know, Stan's cross-promotion to try to sell, but cross-pollination of stories. So if you read the wrong comic in the wrong order, and this is still the thing to this day, even with a month of comics, if they're running an event, the wrong week can mean you are getting a spoiler for a different comic or just getting some mystifying piece of information where you're like, why would they be talking about the Hulk like this right now?
Oh yeah.
And if you're going by these cover dates, you wouldn't know. You won't know till the next month that there was a reference the previous month or vice versa to some events that were happening in a different comic.
For example, like the Avengers issue that we're reading this month literally recaps what happens in another comic, because they dovetail over with each other. So so it's like, if you were a month off or something, that story would not make any sense at all. So, yeah. So hopefully we've got the kinks worked out. You know, I expect that we'll have to do something weird at some point in the future, but I also trust Douglas to steer us right. If we have to call an audible and drag him back in here to help us out once we're all able to be in the same room again, we will totally do that.
Yeah.
So, here's the good news though, Rob. You had to read some extra comics this month to get through everything. Normally, what that would mean is that you would have even more Marvels by the minute that you would have to fumble through. But you know what? Given that global anxiety is at an all-time high right now, I think we're going to step back from that bit a little bit.
Sweet.
I'm not saying that doesn't mean it's not going to appear again in the future at some point. Maybe drop that on you out of the blue. But I'm just having a real bad day and I need to take it out on someone. But for right now, I think we're going to axe that. And also I think we're going to try to open up the format a little bit. I think especially as Marvel is starting to publish more and more comics, I think it's less important to, you know, try to cover everything that they published every month, even though that's kind of literally the name of our podcast. But really just kind of like have a conversation about, what it was and what stood out to us and what seemed important and what's just fun to talk about. I think we're going to have a lot more fun with that.
Yeah, I agree. And we're still covering Marvel by the month. So, we're just getting more accurate than the Marvel Unlimited app.
Yes.
with each month's publishing history.
Exactly. Yes. But anyway, yeah. So we're still coming at these issues that we read every month as if, we're taking the perspective of what it was like to read them as they were coming out. So that means we're still going to provide a little historical context right up front. So let's just real briefly You want to talk a little bit about what was going on in April 1965?
Sure. A couple of cool things. On the 2nd of April, the annual private conference of the Bilderberg Group, composed of top bankers and politicians from North America and Europe, began at Villa d'Este, Italy.
Yes.
D'Este.
And launched a million conspiracy theories.
The Illuminati.
Yes. The lizard men got together for the first time in public, in private public. And then 2 days after that, coincidence, I think not, Robert Downey Jr. was born in Manhattan on April 4th, 1965. Iron Man himself.
Wow.
Yeah.
And far from that, the Iron Man film franchise on the 5th, at the 37th Academy Awards, My Fair Lady won 8 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actor. Mary Poppins won 5, including Best Actress honors for Julie Andrews.
National treasure.
Yep.
On April 9th, the Astrodome opened in Houston, Texas, with an exhibition game between the Houston Astros and the New York Yankees. That was the first baseball game ever played indoors.
Ooh, weird.
Yeah.
On the 9th, Beatles by the month, the Beatles' Ticket to Ride was released as a single in the UK and reached number 1 on the British charts 5 days later. It was released in the United States on April 19th. And then just a few days later on the 13th, the Beatles recorded Help, which would be the title of their next upcoming film, which had been tentatively titled 8 Arms to Hold You.
Which I think I love that title so much.
Just a big picture of Dr. Octopus on the front. Yeah.
Yeah, I think years and years later, I think Veruca Salt put out an album called 8 Arms to Hold You, which was obviously a direct reference to that. So
yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yep. On April 19th, 1965, in Electronics Magazine, engineer and the future co-founder of Intel, Gordon Moore, first suggested that computing power would roughly double every 2 years. And this was a maxim which would become known as Moore's Law.
Nice. Yeah. Which I think curved that stopped being exactly exponential, but it's still pretty true. We just started to hit a materials problem,
right?
Where the heat could not be sustained.
Well, I hope it continues, roughly on the same trajectory, because I need this all to be a simulation.
you want it to be the Matrix?
If I find out that this is actual real life, man.
I like the whole idea of just sort of ignoring that. But again, you've got to at least take it somewhat seriously. It's like a video game where you have only one life,
right?
And a lot of maintenance to do for your character.
Yeah. Well, we were born in the 70s. We grew up in the first generation of arcade games. I mean, we're well equipped for that.
Yeah. This is Dragon's Lair, man. On the 21st, the 1964 New York's World's Fair, which Stanley mentioned every chance he got in his scripts, reopened for a final 6-month run in Flushing Meadows, New York, right down the road from Tony Stark's headquarters.
Yeah. I love that the 1964 World's Fair is still going in 1965.
That fits in well with this publishing nonsense.
Yep. And then finally, at the end of April, April 30th, 1965, the FBI finally stopped wiretapping Martin Luther King Jr., which was very nice of them. The only reason they stopped wiretapping him is because he moved to a new home in Atlanta. And they just apparently couldn't get another warrant for it or something. So
they couldn't get the taps in there. Yeah.
Right.
That's probably it.
So that was it.
Makes sense.
It's not like they actually, evolved or, to a more progressive view of the world, but, baby steps, or not even a baby step. I'm not going to give them credit for this.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so that's a little summation of what life was like in April 1965. We're going to go ahead and take our first break of the episode. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of these funny books. So stay tuned.
Woo-hoo.
Woo-hoo.
Welcome back to Marvel by the Month. We are talking about comics that were released in April 1965, and we're actually going to lead off by catching up with one that came out in March of 1965, and then the follow-up issue. So we're going to talk about Fantastic Four number 39 and Fantastic Four number 40. 39 was written by Stan Lee. The art was by Jack Kirby, inked by Frank Ray, which is the pen name of Frank Giacoya. The title of the story was A Blind Man Shall Lead Them. And then FF number 40 was also written by Stan, penciled by Jack, inked by Vince Coletta. And the story is titled The Battle of the Baxter Building. So let's back up a little bit. When we last saw the Fantastic Four at the end of our second season, they were drifting in the middle of the ocean after the Frightful Four had detonated a Q-bomb. The Frightful Four thought the FF had died in the blast. They thought about taking over the Baxter Building after they blew them up, but they were scared off by Thor's friend Balder, who just happened to be descending from Asgard in a burst of flame at that moment. The Frightful Four reasonably thought he was the Human Torch, so they took off. So that means the Frightful Four thinks the FF are still alive, and they are. But it's not for the reasons that the Frightful Four think. So
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So we'll kick off, issue number 39 here. The Fantastic Four, they don't go looking for revenge against the Frightful Four right away, even though they did survive the bomb. There's a good reason for that, though. The blast from the Q-bomb has taken away their powers. So Ben Grimm is back to his human form, and no one else has their powers. That means that the Frightful Four are also the first of the FF's enemies to actually cleanly defeat them. Yeah. Even Doom can't make that claim at this point, but he is about to give it a shot.
And I have to say also, Sue saved them.
Yes, like,
they would be dead without her force field. So yes. She not only put a field around them to protect them from the Q-bomb, kept them afloat in this like ball even while unconscious. Yeah. So Sue saves the day.
Yep, absolutely. So the FF get rescued by a Navy submarine. They return to Reed's lab, and he spends a couple days trying to create gadgets that help them fake their powers, because as he says, if our enemies ever learn what's happened to us, our lives won't be worth a nickel.
And when we see this, we get another Kirby collage for the shot of Reed's lab. As they're discussing this, and it's another one of those sort of odd ones where he didn't put color on it. So it's just a big black and white crazy bunch of like Tesla coils and stuff in the background, right. with them in color down in the corner. And then it cuts to the next scene and they're just, back into normal Kirby drawn lab with all kinds of awesome Kirby equipment. And his plan is to, of course, make them, Ben's going to just drive a thing robot.
Which we've I love
seen
that.
A thing robot. And only Ben can do it because only Ben knows how the thing will move or
right.
react, I think is how Reed says it. And Johnny's just got a big weird green suit that shoots out fire. there's a bunch of weird contraptions, and you know that Reed's already been tinkering on this for quite a while.
Oh yeah.
But he's also doing the normal Reed thing where he just stays up forever. I don't know, snorting coffee and,
right.
And working on the newest problem.
So that's what Reed is doing. And then meanwhile in Latveria, Doom is being bored by a hypnotist who's trying to entertain him in his throne room. So the hypnotist is going through his act, and while he's doing it, he senses that Doom is already under hypnosis. If you remember in Fantastic Four Annual number 2, Reed had hypnotized Doom to make him think that he had defeated Reed Richards and the Fantastic Four, which convinced Doom to just leave and not mess with them any longer. But that has worn off now. The hypnosis fades from Doom's mind, and he vows revenge.
That's Doom. That's what Doom do.
That's what he does.
But I really love the hypnotist is like, "Ah, sire, in your gratitude, I trust you will reward your humble servant most generously." And Doom, of course, just smacks him and says, gratitude, such weak words are not for Dr. Doom. Here is your reward. Be grateful. I do not put you to death for knowing how I have been tricked. So so what you get is smacked and not put to death.
Yep.
Well, Latveria, it's just a great place to be.
So let's see what happens here. So so we go back to the Fantastic Four. They are testing out their new gadgetry to try to duplicate their powers. Reed contacts their lawyer, Matt Murdock, who helped them out with a lease situation a few months ago. He reveals to them what's going on with them. He's there to he wanted Murdock to show up there so he could do a little bit of basically estate planning, saying it's like, hey, you know, our enemies, if they figure out what's up, we're done for. So I want you to make sure that, like, all my research goes to the government and, you know, our foundation keeps going. And that's what Murdock is there for. While they're talking to Murdock, Doom attacks them with his Doom devices. Murdock slips away and changes into Daredevil and rescues the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, who are desperately trying to save themselves with their, you know, contraptions that Reed has made. I have to say, though, the first shot of them as Matt Murdock arrives, it reminds me so much of Madman and Mike Allred's work.
Yeah.
This look of Reed with all of these gadgets strapped to him that are very Kirby, and these like elongating arms that are robotic arms pouring test tubes together. It's just, the whole shot is so perfectly,
oh yeah,
it's exquisitely Kirby, but just the way it looks reminds me so much of how Mike Allred does that, this sort of retro look.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yep, absolutely. So they see Doom's ship in the distance. It's on top of the Baxter Building, and that means they're gonna have to fight their way to the Baxter Building and up to the top of it to stop Doom. But at this point, Doom doesn't know they don't have their powers. He figures it out, but he doesn't know it at this point. So he's ready for a much bigger fight than what they can put up right now.
Yeah, and they're really being, from here on out, he just starts doing every crazy thing. He attacks them with the Fantastic Car. He like makes the Fantastic Car break into pieces and shoot at them. And the only thing saving them is Daredevil.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, this issue is a huge bump for Daredevil.
Yeah. It's like Captain America. They go to great pains to say he has no, superpowers per se, but he does, of course.
Yeah.
He can sense things and much quicker and move much quicker than most human beings.
So yeah.
It's this, he's like peak, you know, athlete human in addition to his Daredevil senses.
Yes, exactly. So that's where issue number 39 ends. And then it ends on the cliffhanger. The FF are just about to enter the Baxter Building and start to deal with Doom. So issue number 40 picks up. Doom, we find out, has taken over all of the building's defense systems that Reed has installed. The powerless FF, they start from the ground floor and they have to fight their way up, like the good Judge Dredd movie. yeah. And Daredevil, though, he enters through the 35th floor window. He takes the flight straight to Dr. Doom to distract him from the FF.
And that is, it's epic. It's this, again, just proving Daredevil's, he can go head to head with Dr. Doom, who's using Reed Richards, like building defenses and other devices. And he's holding his own.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Doom, obviously his attention is diverted. So, you know, it's not taking anything away from Doom's character either, but yeah, I mean, Daredevil's hanging in there. And I think one of the things that we've seen over and over from that character so far is that his real superpower is just insane persistence.
Yeah, tenacity.
Yeah. So we're seeing that again here, as, you know, Doom is just throwing everything he can at the FF.
Yeah.
So the goal of the Fantastic Four is to get back up to their headquarters on the 35th floor. Reed is looking for a device called a stimulator that can restore their powers. He used the same device a few months ago when the FF lost their powers on the Skrull homeworld. They're very careless with their powers. I'm starting to see a trend here. So he uses it on himself, and then he uses it on Sue, and then he uses it on Johnny. But that's not enough to take Doom down. They need Ben to become the Thing again. And Ben really does not want to become the Thing, but Reed does not give him a choice. And there's just a really great transformation scene after Reed blasts him with the stimulator. I think it might be like the best Thing art that we have seen to date. I just really feel like this is where the definitive version of the Thing shows up.
Yeah, and it's also a rare three panel page, like two panels on the top half and one big panel on the bottom, which is not a usual technique.
Yeah.
But that's how dramatic this is. And it's, yeah, when the Thing transforms and when he becomes the Thing, this looks like the Thing.
Yeah,
we all know. Yeah. And love.
Yeah, and he looks like he's gonna murder Doom, and in fact that's pretty much what he tries to do. He just goes after him.
Yeah. He's telling Doom that is his goal.
Yeah, there's nothing pretty about this. There's nothing fancy about it. Doom uses absolutely everything he's got against Ben, and he's hitting him with it. But it's just not enough. Ben is just this enraged juggernaut. He gets a hold of Doom's arms and he crushes his gauntlets. Then he just like grabs a handful of his chest piece and just rips it right out. And Ben, he's about to kill him. And Reed stops him.
Yeah. And Reed stops him because that is the way to defeat Doom isn't to kill him. It's to just let him know he was defeated.
Yeah.
Is basically Reed's argument.
Yeah.
He's like, if he has to walk away knowing that one man beat him, that is more than enough to make him, it just is what they understand of Doom, to leave them alone, because he's going to be humiliated. He's just going to go crawl back in a hole and not bug them for quite a while.
Doom, he is defeated. Reed encourages Ben to let him go. He slinks out of the Baxter building, and the day is saved, but all is not well. So Reed and Sue and Johnny, they're all back to normal. They've got each other. But Ben is back to being the Thing, which is, he's miserable. And he's had it. He quits the team.
Yeah, it's the second time he's walked off, but this time seems much more legit, because he really did not want to be changed back and could have been human. And that's mainly what he was taking out on Doom, but Doom deserved it.
That's Fantastic Four number 39 and 40. Real quickly, let's jump over to Journey into Mystery number 117, and find out what Thor is up to this month.
Yeah, I will walk us through. So Journey into Mystery 117, written by Stan Lee, art by Jack Kirby with Vince Coletta. This is for both of the stories, both the Tales of Asgard and the main story.
Mm-hmm.
The main story is called Into the Blaze of Battle. And Tales of Asgard is called The Sword in the Scabbard. So Thor also ended on a cliffhanger at the end of our second season. Loki cheated his way to victory in the Trial of the Gods by using magical Norn stones to get past every obstacle. So just cheated every time. It's solid Loki.
Yep.
What happens when Thor gets back to Asgard after Loki beat him there? That's what we're finding out. Thor accuses Loki of treachery, which Loki denies, and Odin grants him permission to return to Earth and try to find the Norn stones, proof that Loki cheated. And of course, he gives a time limit to this.
So yes. Yes.
Like 24 hours or something.
Yeah. It's a 24 hour time limit. As soon as they both got back to Asgard, Loki had sent the Norn stones to Earth, so that he was basically trying to conceal the evidence.
So the stones have been cast to Earth. So Thor follows his hammer, which is like a magical tracking thing for Norn stones. It can just sense them. It's got a Uru sense.
Yes. Oh, but before before that happens, when Thor first gets to Earth, he sees the Enchantress and Executioner messing with Jane Foster. Balder has already arrived to try to help her out. So Thor shows up, runs off the Enchantress and Executioner really quickly. And then Balder, he casts a spell of forgetfulness on Jane Foster and also on the entire city of New York. so no one's going to remember what happened.
That's like an Odin grade. It seems, I didn't know Balder had that kind of power, but you know.
Yeah.
So, okay. So after he gets, deals with, Enchantress and the Executioner, then he starts following this hammer, which is tracking the Nornstones to Vietnam. So, he gets knocked out by an artillery blast, but rescued by Vietnamese villagers. There's a lot of political subtext going on.
I don't even know if it's subtext.
It's propaganda at this point. But he resumes his search for the Nornstones and decides that it'll be easier to get through the dense jungle if he transforms back into lame Dr. Don Blake.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have the strength of a god or the power of flight, and he's now just changed to that guy in a jungle. Predictably, he's captured by the Viet Cong.
Yeah, so. It's such a weird thought process. Like, it's like they Stan and Jack, they're trying to figure out, it's like, okay, he needs to get captured to get to the next part of the story. So we're just going to have him get frustrated with how dense the jungle is and how his cloak keeps getting caught in it. So he decides that, you know, turning back into his physically disabled form is the ideal solution to this, rather than just, you know, like whirling his hammer and plowing through the jungle.
Or like tucking his cape into his, you know, whatever.
Yeah, or just under-roos. Leave the cape behind. Yeah.
Yeah. Just take your cape off, man. Maybe take your helmet off, too. Those wings on the helmet are going to catch on everything. So. Carrying on, the Viet Cong commander, Husak, binds Blake's arms behind his back with his walking stick, which, can you guess where this is going?
Yeah.
the Viet Cong bring in the villagers who tended to Thor. They're Husak's family, but he's utterly committed to communism and sees them as traitors.
Yeah.
He's
threatening them. His soldiers bring them in. They say, "Here, the last batch of hostages, comrade. It was known that they sheltered the unknown flying man." So they're in trouble specifically because they helped Thor.
Yeah, and this gets even crazier. It is super dramatic. I have to give Stan the credit here.
Yeah.
Blake falls on his walking stick, which, you know, is tucked through his arm. So he has to like sort of fall sideways to get it to hit the ground.
Yeah.
Which transforms him back into Thor, which he could have done this at any time.
Yes.
Is waited till things are getting pretty bad. But Thor finds the Nornstones hidden in a cache of artillery shells and like just a cavern full of like warheads. gunshots ring out. Husak has shot his mother and then instantly regrets it, which yeah. anybody should if you shoot your mom.
Right.
Don't shoot your mom, kids.
Don't shoot your mom if you take nothing else from the podcast.
Husak lets Thor leave with his sister, then blows up the artillery, killing himself and destroying the base.
Yeah.
So it's like Shakespearean tragedy right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you thought the propaganda earlier in the issue was a little thick. So Husak's parting speech is, "It was communism that made me what I am, that shaped me into a brutal, unthinking instrument of destruction. To communism, then, may it vanish from the face of the earth and the memory of mankind." And then he blows up the artillery shells, kills himself, destroys the base, and Thor flies off, you know, with his sister to rescue her.
Yeah.
And that's Journey into Mystery, number 117.
Yeah, there's a short story, Tales of Asgard, but that's it's very short and very just introducing a giant doomsday weapon.
Basically. Yeah, yeah. And that story actually, so that's like a multi part story. This actually is the first chapter in a really extended series of like these little 5-6 page adventures. So I think at some point during the season, we will revisit all of them, or, you know, a good chunk of them at a time. But yeah, I mean, like not really, there's not enough that happens in each individual issue to really, you know, cover it in any meaningful way. So yeah, so that's Journey into Mystery. Let's go ahead and take our second break. And when we come back, we will find out how the new Avengers are doing. So stay tuned here on Marvel by the Month. Okay, continuing on with the first episode of Season 3 of Marvel by the Month, we have Avengers number 17. The story is called Four Against the Minotaur, and it's written by Stan Lee. The art is by Don Heck, inked by Dick Ayers. So when we last checked in with the Avengers at the end of our second season, all of the founding members had left the team, and Captain America was left with three ex-supervillains as new teammates. Now, the Avengers team dynamics, in contrast to like the Fantastic Four, they've usually been pretty stable, except for the Hulk, who, you know, immediately quits the team and, you know, he breaks bad on them pretty quickly. Yeah. But now with this new lineup, there's capital D drama. So you got Quicksilver, who secretly thinks he deserves to be the leader, Hawkeye, who very overtly says he should be the leader, and Scarlet Witch, she seems to have a little crush on Cap, and she thinks he's great. So that's the mixed bag that Cap is having to deal with.
I have to say, I love when Hawkeye's like, look, Hotshot, suppose we vote for our leader, and Cap just puts him in his place. At ease, you imitation Robin Hood. When you've been an Avenger as long as I have, then you'll have the right to speak out that way, and you can like it or lump it, pal. And that's This is where Scarlet Witch is like, ooh, strong, man.
Yeah. So there's definitely some trouble in paradise there, but they have a mission that they're going to go on. Their mission is to find the Hulk, because with Thor and Giant Man and Iron Man no longer on the team, they need more raw power. There's no real super strong characters left on the Avengers. You've got a guy with a bow, a guy with a shield, a lady who has some, you know, kind of gimmicky luck powers, and then a guy who can run super fast, who's really seems to be like the only real clear like superpower on the entire team. Mm-hmm. And this is Iron Man told them at the end of the last issue that going after the Hulk is what they should turn their attention to. They don't know that the Hulk has been kidnapped by the leader in the current issue of Tales to Astonish, which is issue number 69. At the end of that issue, Bruce Banner is presumed dead at the end of it. So,
so they're looking. It's a snipe hunt.
Yes, exactly. So the story starts out, we get to see the Avengers playroom, which is basically their version of the X-Men's danger room. As they are training, a robot attacks them. They defeat it, and it tells them that they'll find the Hulk in, quote, the desert.
Yeah, I love, and this robot looks like, it's just a solid Kirby looking robot. I don't think this is even Kirby doing it, but
no, it's Heck. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, just giant shoulders. It's probably twice as tall as anybody else in the room.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous. And I, when I first saw it, I immediately thought like of some new Crimson Dynamo, like not even a robot, but then they make it quite clear it's a robot.
Yes.
You start going, Doom, who's making this robot?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was sent by the Mole Man. yeah, sure. Why not? He's never used robots before, but now he's using robots. He thought it was going to defeat them easily with their weak lineup. It didn't happen. So he went to his fallback plan, which was to lure them to the spot where the Hulk helped the Avengers fight the Lava Men in Avengers number 5. So they head there on a hunch, because, you know, the desert is a pretty vague hint. They get there, and then Mole Man triggers a giant trap door in the desert, and they all wind up deep underground.
Which is, now we're talking Mole Man stuff here. Giant trap door, you know, underground stuff. And we are already seeing, you know, as they fight the robot itself, the other Avengers start to, they're thinking their appreciation for Cap and his fast action and fast orders and, you know, just reading the situation and moving through it.
Yeah.
So you can see them start to gain their trust and confidence in him.
Yes, exactly. So they're trapped in this underground cavern. Quicksilver scouts ahead. He comes back all freaked out. and it's because he saw the Minotaur, who looks like a giant orange Sasquatch with horns. It's just not a classical Minotaur.
I have no idea why they chose to even call it that. Like, it just seems so weird. His face does not look like a bull even.
No.
It's just a big, like, hairy weirdo with sort of a gorilla face and horns.
Horns
are it's like, if you can't call everything with horns a Minotaur.
Yeah.
So,
you know, they get into a scrap of the Minotaur. As the Avengers are fighting the Minotaur, we see that the Hulk is going after the leader less than a mile away. So this is literally the story that's playing out in Tales to Astonish 69. They just kind of cut back for a panel or two to show what's happening in that story. So back to the Avengers, Hawkeye fires a blast arrow, causes a cave in. Quicksilver gets separated from the rest of the team and winds up captured by the Mole Man. Hawkeye blinds the Minotaur with a flash arrow at Cap's suggestion, because he's the tactical genius, and the Avengers wind up defeating the Minotaur.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. They have him run into, it's like they can't beat his raw strength, but they can trick him like a matador into running into his horns into solid rock so far that he can't move.
Yeah.
And that's how they get him. It's pretty solid.
And here's a classic bit of Don Heck storytelling. The way that they do it, so they show the Scarlet Witch. It's a close-up on Scarlet Witch and Hawkeye, and she's pointing off-panel. And Hawkeye's describing what she's doing. So it's like a incredibly low-budget movie that can't afford to show you the actual fight, so it's just having a guy watching it and describing the action.
It's like the Fantastic Four 1994 movie.
Oh man. In retrospect, does it seem like we maybe made a poor decision wasting what we did not realize at the time was some of our last few hours of in-person socializing watching that thing?
It seems appropriate for what we've chosen to undertake here. You know,
it just is. Yeah.
I bet Levi regrets that.
Yes. He claims he doesn't, but he's a nice guy. He would not, he'd not actually say what he's actually thinking. So let's get back to this. The Avengers, they track down Quicksilver. They rescue him from the Mole Man. And the Mole Man tricks them into stepping onto a glass elevator and shoots them to the surface. And Cap says that they didn't find the Hulk, but they found something more important. And what was that they found that was so much more? Was it friendship? Was it
not exactly
the real Hulk was the friends they made along the way?
That's basically it. It's the knowledge that they don't need the Hulk, that they're a strong enough team, together.
And, yeah,
you know, with their one fully superpowered person being Quicksilver.
Right.
I love it's, this is a cool team to me because I always like the street level people. I like the Punisher,
yeah,
even though he's, you know, problematic with his, love of guns.
Yeah.
And murder.
Yeah.
But still just the idea that just, it's a human being going up against whoever. Daredevil does it. But Daredevil has enough power, you know, and
yeah,
I think John Hodgman has pointed out, is I always just say, you know, his super smell is what Barb and I talk about all the time with Daredevil. I'm like, he could just smell you coming. He could smell your fear. So I kind of root for this team right away. I think maybe that's what Stan was doing. He's just like, let's just take away all the huge power, but still make them sort of the global defense against massive villains.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah.
Even though I don't think this is the most compelling story in the world, but the fact that they have to approach their challenges in a completely different way now, it's a very different book than it has been.
Yeah.
And it's a very distinctive book now. You know, there's not a lot else like it in the Marvel universe. You know, all the other teams have like legit powers. Yeah, these guys, they have to get very clever and very creative, but you know, the threat level hasn't diminished at all.
Yeah. So the stakes are so much higher. And I think that's why, even though this is such a corny, like the alleged Minotaur, it, you know, is not that compelling of a villain, and Mole Man with the robot and whatever. There's like, I haven't even said this out loud on the podcast, but I started calling them leaves of logic, because they're like they're like the Ant-Man Lieber stories that were just so, I'm like, what?
The Larry Lieber stories. Yeah.
So yep. It's like a Lieber leap of logic. But in my mind, good. I call them leaves. It's just this weird shortcut. But the whole story is set up just to show the people gaining confidence in Cap as a leader, showing how great he is, and then showing how this team of underdogs can work together. So in that way, it works. But in the way of actually having a cohesive and linear, believable plot and or action that is actually seen on panel, it is not the best book.
Not so much. But there's better stories ahead. They're just getting their legs under them right now. So
yeah.
Well, let's move from a pretty well-defined team book. Let's do some solo action here. You want to take us through what's going on in Amazing Spider-Man number 25?
I sure do, and I know you're going to love this one, so I can't wait to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah.
So, Amazing Spider-Man number 25, written by Stan Lee, plot and art by Steve Ditko. This is called out that Steve had the plot for this.
Yes.
It's rare when there's a credit like that, but that is right at the beginning.
Yep.
So, the story is called Captured by J. Jonah Jameson, and the issue came out the previous month, but since Spidey number 26 ends on a cliffhanger, we'll come back to that next week.
Fair enough.
There are a couple of notable firsts. So this is the plot from Steve Ditko. And we also get our first glimpse sort of Mary Jane Watson. Her face is obscured, which is a Ditko trademark. We won't see her for another 15 issues or so. He loves to plant these things, and like a year later, you'll find out.
I hate to let people down, but we're actually coming to the end of Steve Ditko's run on Amazing Spider-Man. So when it's time for her to show up, Steve does not draw her. So I don't think, I'm not sure Ditko ever drew Mary Jane Watson ever.
That is crazy to think of. He's introduced the character and never draws her face.
Yep.
But judging from the reaction of Liz Allen and Betty Brant, the competition for the world's least likely ladies man is heating up. So it's a great scene that, just Betty and Liz and in Aunt May's, you know, whatever parlor meeting and just they're already like so upset with each other, but it's a really funny moment.
It really is. And what a crazy evolution of Peter Parker in just, you know, 25 issues, where, you know, he's gone from being this unlikable nerd that everyone just makes fun of to, you know, now he's literally got two women fighting for his attention, plus a third one who's about to be introduced. Like, how do he's
this
incredibly
might be why I like Peter Parker so much growing up. So let's get back to this whole J. Jonah Jameson thing. It starts with Peter taking pictures of a street crime that he tries to sell to J. Jonah Jameson. He's got to talk him into, you know, why he should buy them, because it's Spider-Man failing at capturing criminals. While he's there, an inventor named, I want to say Smythe, just because there's a Y in his name.
Yep.
Shows up with a robot that he says will defeat Spider-Man. Triple J is going to pass on it, but Peter eggs him on and immediately regrets it. It's just Peter like telling him, because he thinks he's gonna, you know, fight this thing and make Jonah look like a laughingstock and take pictures.
Right.
But Peter is the test subject for the robot demo, and it instantly wraps him up in unbreakable steel cables. Betty is furious with Peter for siding with Jonah against Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. It's just Peter being responsible for his own headaches, as you
Yeah, know. No, he absolutely, like, he's, the thing I love about this issue is that he digs his own hole from the very beginning. So it seems like at the start of the issue, things are going great for him. Like he's stitching himself a second costume. So he's going to have a spare. So he's not going to run into that whole wet costume dilemma that he had in a previous issue. He's like, I'm going to have some fun with Jonah. I'm going to, you know, have him sick this stupid looking robot at me. And then I'm just going to crush it and make him look like an idiot again, like I did with Mysterio, like I did with, you know, when he thought I was Electro, you know, all these other things. Like, he's like, this is just going to be, you know, another day at the office. But he gets wrapped up by, and this robot basically looks like a giant oval with another oval on top of it, and like some spinny little legs. I mean, it looks really just dumb. It's flimsy.
It's a dumb looking robot.
Yeah. But then it shoots out all these crazy cables, and
they're
all
like
of a sudden
tentacles. Yeah.
These, yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, when you first see it, you're just like, this thing is ridiculous looking. And then it actually springs into action. You're like, oh boy. And it's like the reader realizes at the same moment that Peter Parker realizes, like, uh-oh.
This is a terrifying threat. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's programmed to be attracted to spider essence or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
So when they're testing it, they have him holding a spider. So they don't realize that it's like really sensing Spider-Man.
And, right.
So it is going fully into action. So we've got Betty mad at Peter, who's already just digging this hole. The robot has the aura of Spider-Man's presence is what it can detect. I don't know how, you know, you wire that up in the robot, but so it will automatically pursue him. Jonah watches through the camera of the robot and in the controller, and his face is displayed on a screen where the robot's head would be.
It's
which is also
so ridiculous. I love it. Yeah.
It's on the cover. It looks so stupid and hilarious, and it's awesome. So it starts chasing Peter, who's already trying to avoid a fight with Flash Thompson. Flash is jealous of Liz and getting, you know, having like whatever tutoring from Peter. He quickly changes into costume and the hunt is on. Spidey's webs won't stick to it. He can barely dodge the cables. It's like covered in some oil or something.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing that really, like, you know, now you've already seen, you realize this is going to be an actual threat, and then it starts chasing him. And the thing that makes it so terrifying is it's like it's homing in on him. And it can navigate any obstacle. It can climb up walls. It has like these telescoping legs. It's got those, you know, just dozens of tentacles. The webs won't work on it. And it's fast too. Like even as fast as Spider-Man is, he's outmatched by this thing. Like it's a legitimate threat to him.
So now he's just running, and Jonah is absolutely ecstatic. He's just overjoyed, his big crazy grin. He's gone from trying to turn public sentiment against Spidey to secretly bankrolling a supervillain to take him out, which was the Scorpion, to flat out chasing him with a killer robot that has his face on it. It's insane.
There's a point toward the end of the Ditko run, and it starts with Scorpion, where J. Jonah Jameson is just like legitimately trying to kill Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like it's not just
pastime.
Yeah. It's not like he has just a grudge against him or like he sticks in his craw or something, but like he's really trying to take Spidey out of the game completely for real reason.
Yeah. Just because he feels inferior, as we've learned from earlier issues.
Right.
It's like, I thought maybe he just wanted to unmask him or something, but I kept waiting for that to be part of this plot, and it wasn't. It was just like, crush him.
Yeah.
So finally, Spider can't outrun this thing, and it catches him and completely wraps him up. And Jonah and Smythe can't have him. They know that Spider-Man will get away if they have the robot trying to come back to them. So they have to go find it. So they head over to the location, but Peter uses his super science brain to reprogram the robot. He uses some, you know, his sticky fingers to pull the shell off and get into it. Mm-hmm. So when Jonah goes to unmask Spider-Man, he finds only an empty costume.
Yeah. Which he then takes. So remember what we said at the start of this? You know, Peter was feeling pretty cocky because he's like, I just made myself a spare costume. I'm not going to have any trouble with that one. Yeah, if my costume gets too wet for me to wear, like I did, you know, last time. So now he's back down to one costume.
So Peter, after all this, after, you know, losing his costume, returns home to a disapproving Aunt May. He's missed this whole meetup of Liz and Betty and Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Aunt May is cleaning up his room and found his spare Spider-Man costume. So she's just confronting him right when he comes in. He tries to convince her he's not Spider-Man, which he's never even considered.
I know. I love it. Like, that's his number one concern. His number one concern is that it's like, oh no, my secret identity. She's like, of course you're not Spider-Man. What are you, stupid?
So she doesn't want him to get into trouble wearing it. So she's taking it away from him. So now Peter went from having two costumes at the start to no costume by the yep. end. And what's he going to do next month?
We'll find out. Yeah. So the next issue is actually the one that came out in April 65. Because it's a two-parter, we'll just cover both of those next episode. Without giving too much away, he's definitely going to need a Spider-Man costume. Because he's got his work cut out for him. So,
yeah.
Well, so that's Amazing Spidey number 25. Let's go ahead, take our last break. And we come back. I think we're going to talk about maybe the most important character to be introduced in the Marvel Universe this month, which I'm very excited for. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, we are in the home stretch of our first episode of Season 3, Marvel by the Month. We're going to talk about Daredevil number 8. This one is written by Stan Lee. The art is by Wally Wood. The title of the story, The Stilt Man Cometh. And if that doesn't make any sense to you, just hang on. It's not going to make a lot more sense by the end of it.
It will make less.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about how Wally Wood has elevated Daredevil to one of our favorite early Marvel books. He just took some ideas that really should not have worked and turned them into amazing stories just with the power of his storytelling and his craft. Like, for example, on paper, there was an issue where Daredevil fought Namor, and that should have been a total mismatch and should have just been like a dumb, gimmicky story. But it turned out to be one of our favorite things that we've read for this show. This month, Wood has his work cut out for him. So our story begins with Daredevil's dramatic rescue of a woman who's about to be run over by an out-of-control car. The car has no driver. The brakes are cut and it's got a bomb in it just to, you know, make it a little extra dramatic. Daredevil has to get rid of it before it explodes and hurts someone or him.
Yeah. So it keeps him pretty busy. I do feel like this issue starts off right out of the gate with him just constantly describing how his powers work.
Yes.
It's so hilarious.
Yeah. Also that splash page that it opens with, the first thing Daredevil is saying is he's talking to the woman who's about to be run over. And the word balloon is keep screaming. Don't stop. Don't stop screaming.
It's so weird. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's saying like he needs that to pinpoint her position above the roar of the speeding car as if he's forgotten that he has a radar sense. But
yeah.
So what is up with this car? Well, it turns out it's just a distraction for a robbery of a helicopter containing payrolls. It's being robbed by Daredevil's newest villain, Stiltman. He's an armored guy on telescoping stilts that can make him as tall as a skyscraper. It's such a dumb power. But Wally Wood finds a way to make it really visually awesome. You see him like stepping over buildings, walking over bridges, shrinking down instantly to hide at street level. It's just a lot of really good perspective work to create a sense of drama and a sense of vertigo. Which is
that first shot of him so they show him just in front of a helicopter and then they cut to behind him. And that's where you get the idea of the height, and that one shot is the full height panel. That's the other thing. It's just the way he divvies up panels is different, than most. It's like how Ditko will do a fight scene, but this is just, it's Stiltman. He's really tall. Yep. So he gets this narrow panel on one side of the page that just the whole height of the page, and it's genius. It's just it gives it such gravity and interest, and
absolutely,
even though you immediately know there's no way this guy could stand up, he just fall over all the time. It's a dumb power.
Anyway, Stiltman, he successfully robs the helicopter. Then we cut to back at the Nelson and Murdoch offices. A man named Wilbur Day wants to hire them. He claims that his employer stole his invention. Murdoch calls Day's employer, Carl Caxton, threatens a lawsuit immediately. That doesn't go over super well.
Yeah, it's really weird to also just get that deep into lawyer stuff.
Yes.
Which happens, with Matt Murdock, but this is just like him calling someone to threaten a lawsuit. I was like, I don't know if we needed to take up that many panels for that in this story. We need to get back to Stiltman.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're about to. So Murdock heads home. He does a little workout in his apartment gym. And then he, through his shortwave radio, hears about another Stiltman heist. So he suits up and tries to stop him, but is incredibly quickly defeated by the Man of Stilt.
He can hear him. He can't quite understand either. Apparently his blindness is making it hard for him to comprehend. And it is hard. It's hard for us to comprehend.
Right.
A man whose power is just giant legs. I mean, I have pretty long legs.
I was going to say, that's basically your power. And yeah, I don't understand how that works.
I mean, I'm more of the actual giant man, just a bumbling idiot, but, just hitting my head all the time, sitting in oversized chairs at meetings. I think it's just he couldn't plan for what this guy is and couldn't even fathom it when he got there.
Yeah.
So that's how he gets defeated so easily.
Yep. So right now it's Stiltman 2. Daredevil has yet to get on the board. So we cut to the next day. Wilbur Day and Carl Caxton get into a huge argument at the Nelson and Murdoch offices. So Caxton is now claiming that he invented the hydraulic devices that Day says that he stole from him. Both men are so fired up that Murdoch can't tell the difference between their heart rates, so he doesn't know who's lying.
Yeah, that seems iffy. But we'll keep running with it.
Yep. Murdoch and Day go to Caxton's home, and they find the Stiltman legs just hanging out on his lawn. It's like, aha, we found our criminal. Caxton shows up with a gun and asks them what they're doing on his property. Day knocks out Caxton. He tries to knock out Murdoch, who plays along with it to see where this is all going. Then he steals an experimental molecular condenser, which is basically just a shrink ray, from Caxton's lab and puts the Stiltman legs on and makes good his escape.
Yeah, and this is where, even at this point, I wasn't clear. It was more complicated than a Scooby-Doo episode. I wasn't clear if he was Stiltman or if Carl Caxton was. And it's like, can somebody just explain that to me.
Right.
And I kept like, it finally becomes more clear, but it's just like, were you Stilt Man all along?
Right.
And yeah. And you stole this, you couldn't even invent your own stilts. what a lame villain.
Yeah. Oh, but he gets lamer. So Daredevil pursues Day, who accidentally hits himself with the molecular condenser ray, and he shrinks to nothing.
Yep. and that's it.
That's pretty much it. That's that. The threat of Stilt Man is ended. I'd like to say that's the last time that we'll see Stilt Man, because, you know, honestly, if you don't have Wally Wood drawing him, I'm not sure that you're going to get a lot of good stuff out of this character, but it is absolutely not the last time we are going to see Stilt Man.
No, and in fact, Stilt Man still, or a version of Stilt Man, still continues to this day. And there's some really interesting Stilt Man stories, I have to say.
Yeah.
Hawkeye interacts with Stilt Man fairly often, and it's just, I can't believe that it's a character. I mean, there's so many. The Human Top, who is also in issues this month. I've like, whenever we've talked about the start, like when we first started this, you would say, and this is the first appearance of this villain, and I'd be like, how could it be anything but the last appearance of this villain? But they don't let the villains go. They just, it doesn't matter if you're Dr. Doom or Stilt Man or the Human Top, you're gonna get some billing again. Rarely do we lose them, and when we do, it's just as mysterious, like the Ringmaster stays and the Magician goes away.
Exactly. So that's basically all the high points of this. Maybe Stilt Man. I didn't mean that to be a pun. That's the major stories that we wanted to cover this month. I do think there were a few other just little things that I wanted to mention, and maybe you do too. I thought we could do a little new segment called Marvelous Moments at the end, where we can just mention, you know, maybe a few items that we wanted to mention that don't really fit anywhere else. Do you have anything that comes to mind for you?
Oh, yeah. So we have, there are a couple, we're continuing a storyline where Dormammu has powered up Baron Mordo in Strange Tales.
Yeah.
So in Strange Tales number 133, when we ended on our live episode, it looked like Mordo had made Doctor Strange just shrink into nothingness, or you know, like disappear into blackness. It just was a question mark. But then we've come to realize that he had taken Mordo's own power and then used it to just sort of shoot himself through sort of infinite dimensions. At the speed of, or beyond the speed of thought. And so that he used that power to basically hide himself till he could get his power back. But what he does is just this wonderful Ditko fever dream. It's Doctor Strange. This is on page 3 of that story, or page 15 of the book. It's mind-bendingly gorgeous. It's all of the weird stuff we've seen, these weird planes and disconnected pieces that cross over each other, and it's just Strange flying through them. The quote from Stan is, through the infinite at a speed beyond human comprehension. And it's just all of these crazy scenes, a whole page of this insanity. I loved it. It was like the story itself fell flat pretty fast, but that was awesome.
The art, the Ditko art in the Doctor Strange story is just, he hits another level in these next few. It's just incredible. It's so good. And also in that issue, you know, Strange Tales has the Doctor Strange story, and then it also has Human Torch and Thing. I just wanted to mention this one real briefly, because the villain of the piece makes some strange choices, and I'm really interested to see how they deal with them going forward. So the Puppet Master, he takes on the Human Torch and the Thing, but he has had plastic surgery So they won't recognize him. He looks more like Uncle Fester than Billy Corgan now.
He looks way like Uncle Fester.
Yeah. Which
big
is, you know,
turtleneck, bald head.
And, you know, going from Uncle Fester to Billy Corgan is, I would say that's basically a lateral move. And by the end of the story, he has turned himself into a plastic mannequin accidentally. So honestly, like, I know the Puppet Master comes back and I know he has his original appearance at some point. So I'm very interested to see how he gets out of this one and gets his original face back.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, there are so many little beautiful things in the Tales of Suspense, 66 and 67, we have the World War II era Captain America story where we learn the secret origin of the Red Skull, who's a total schlub who Adolf Hitler randomly picks out of a crowd to make into the perfect Nazi. So Red Skull is captured and brainwashed Cap, but even that isn't enough to keep him from nearly breaking Hitler's hand with the reflexive rays of his shield. So Cap just can't not beat up on Hitler. You also Bucky just lays into a bunch of Nazis in this too. That was maybe my favorite part of the whole month, was just little Bucky getting captured by a bunch of Nazis and just giving them what for.
He's great.
Definitely shooting some off panel and things like that. Like, you go ahead and kill a couple Nazis, Bucky. That's fine.
Yeah. Proto Winter Soldier stuff. And then, I didn't want to spend any more time talking about this than we had to, because it is a giant man story, but I'm very excited by the ending of Tales to Astonish number 69. It's so exciting. I had to save it for last. There's nothing that can top this. So Giant Man nearly gets defeated by the Human Top once again, manages to pull defeat from the jaws of victory and then pull victory out of that somehow. But then he decides to retire after nearly getting beaten by the Human Top. So next issue, his spot in Tales to Astonish will be taken by Namor the Submariner. No Giant Man in the Avengers, no Giant Man in Tales to Astonish. We are going to have our first episode in like 40 episodes where we don't have to talk about Henry Pym.
I love that.
I'm so happy.
That is a silver lining there. Because after having read both of those comics, I was getting pretty sad. and the Human Top's new costume. He's made he's got like under wings under his arms that
so
he can
weird.
Spin and fly now. And it's just a terrible looking costume. I don't know how they made this costume. And I mean, it's one up better than him just running around in street clothes, which he was doing the last time we saw him.
Yeah.
But still, it's ridiculous and it's bad. Like, I think everyone in the bullpen should have been just like, you know, maybe throw some purple on that. It's just like a green thing with wings on it. It looks like a Stevie Nicks shirt or something.
Yeah.
With a
no,
hood.
Literally, that's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. So yeah, very full month of comics. And of course a few that we had to throw in there to make sure that we were back on track. So now the challenge is, can we actually boil this all down and pick out a panel of the month? Did you have any success finding something that worked for you?
I did. And it was just pure like brain candy for me right now. It was just that same panel we mentioned in Tales of Suspense, page six, panel two of the Captain America story. Hitler tries to punch a helpless and hypnotized Cap. He's like, oh, he's hypnotized. He can't do anything. I'm just going to punch him in the face because I'm Hitler and I suck. And, but Cap's reflexes cause him to pull the shield up in front of him, and Hitler just punches the shield and then is all, you know, whining about his hand. And it's delicious. It's like Inglourious Basterds. It's just for everyone who's like, that is what Hitler deserves. Like he deserves so much worse. And it's just so fun to see. So it just made me feel a little bit of joy in the middle of all this crazy stuff we're dealing with in the world right
yeah
now.
No, I that jumped out at me too. That was definitely one of my very favorite panels. I'll make sure that winds up on Instagram this week because it's a balm for the soul.
Yeah.
And well, my panel of the month comes from Strange Tales number 134. It's a page 7 of the Doctor Strange story, panel 3. And it's kind of crazy. I don't think I've literally ever seen anything like this before. But it's a cutaway view of a passenger airplane that Baron Mordo's ethereal minions are chasing Doctor Strange's astral projection through. But so it's like a front-on view of the plane. You're looking at it like as if you're standing right in front of the plane. But it's a cutaway view, so
yeah, the nose is cut off.
Yeah, right? You're like halfway into the passenger cabin, so it's like it took me a second to figure out what it was, and once I realized, it's like this is amazing. But it's like you see basically four people sitting in a row in just like airplane chairs, and you see like the outline of the wings and all that, and then you just see like the ghosts flying right through it. But it's just, yeah, like I said, it's something that it takes you a second to figure out for your brain to make sense of it. And once you do, you're just like, it's something that I'm sure other artists have done similar things, similar illustrations, but I don't think anyone has ever taken that approach to it.
No, it's a bizarre way to paint that scene, and it works. It takes you just a couple extra seconds to understand what the hell is going on.
It gets across the idea that like something incredibly strange is happening that all these normal people are entirely unaware of.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. So anyway, yeah. Good month of comics.
Yeah. Tons of comics this month.
Yeah. Yeah. and we've got, we've got some good stuff to read, for next week's episode. Where this is all leading up to, I'm very excited about, once we get there in about 10 episodes or so, it leads into one of my very favorite, Marvel stories of all time. So, forward to that.
Yeah, this is going to be a good season.
Yeah. So, we did it, man. We're back on. We figured out how to do this remotely. Hopefully this sounds halfway decent. It's nice to be doing this with you again.
Yeah, I'm glad. It's very nice to have something like this. The band isn't recording right now. I'm going to be recording by myself, getting some drums, but not having the band come over every week or so is a really weird thing. That would be the only time when I really, that and this podcast is where I notice the isolation.
Yeah.
So being able to hang out and talk about comics remotely is very fun. So I'm glad we're back on. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
The virus can't stop us.
We're virus proof as long as we don't leave our house. We don't really love leaving our house anyway, so it works out. And you are all welcome to hang out with us remotely as well. One thing I will say is that it's not the way I wanted to boost our social following, but we've seen a lot of activity on our Instagram and Facebook pages since all this nonsense has been going on. So please join us there at Marvel by the Month on Instagram, facebook.com/Marvel by the Month on Facebook. We're there pretty frequently. We love chatting with anyone who feels like showing up. Reach out, drop us an email. Let us know how you are getting through this. Or you know what? If you don't even want to talk about this stuff, that is also totally cool. Just talk to us about comics. You can either send us an email or a voice memo to marvelbythemonth@gmail.com. And you can always find us on the internet at marvelbythemonth.com.
And if you're new to this thing, you just look for the essentials in our list of episodes. You can listen to two and get caught up with pretty much the entire Silver Age of Marvel Comics.
Yes.
To where we are right now. So if you want a shortcut, that's the way to go.
And support your local comic stores if they are still doing any sort of order by mail or anything like that. They could really use your help right now. Everyone could, but throw a couple bucks their way. I'm sure they would appreciate it. I think that's it. So for Marvel by the Month, my name is Brian Stratton.
And mine is Rob Milne.
And we'll see you next week for next month. Stay inside and read comics.